Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, and we're grateful that you can join us again for another episode. Thanks to you, all of you who perhaps are tuning in via Facebook, our Facebook live stream feed, or in our group on Facebook, Building BFC Institute Participants. Or just join us from the Blog Talk platform. I'd like to encourage you to give us a call here and join the live conversation at 657-383-0944. And again, that's 657-383-0944. We begin the month of March, and really the year of 2018, with a desire to answer questions: how do we do, or how do we make certain improvements, particularly for the target population that we've been focusing on, being at-risk males across urban America. And during Black History Month, we offer some historical information, some case studies, some events. In March, we said we're going to focus on how to do certain things, okay? And so that's where our focus is. We begin talking about the three pillars of a healthy, viable community, okay? And we identify those as being education, economics or the economy, and theology. So this week, we are beginning our Tuesday night discussion on economics. And we are grateful for each of you that has joined us. We're looking for Pastor Ricky. I think he's here. I think Pastor Ricky Waller has joined us tonight. Grateful for him. And we invite you, encourage you to join us as well in some great dialogue. We don't expect you to agree with everything we say. However, we do ask that you be respectful of others' opinions and share yours by all means. Register your questions with us. We'll be happy to make an attempt at answering them. And as always, if there's something we need to go find out the answer to, we don't know, we'll tell you we don't know it and give us a minute, or allow us to go and research that and bring that answer back to you. All right. For those of you that just may be tuning in for the first time, what we do is we begin with a monologue. I do a monologue which provides some context or some factual background or information for our discussion tonight. And we'll be using Dr. Claude Anderson, who Harvard University taught there, and I believe he's retired now, economics. He taught economics there, and he's a well-renowned African-American economist. We'll be relying on him a little bit tonight in our discussion as we talk from the topic how economics impact urban American culture. We talked about it as being a pillar of a healthy community. When we talk about urban America, and particularly at-risk or challenged communities, that's something I believe is important for us to look at. So we're talking from the topic again, how economics impact urban American communities, or culture, I'm sorry. Again, I want to encourage you in about maybe 15 minutes or so from now to give us a call here and join the live dialogue, 657-383-0944. Enjoy the monologue, and I look forward to engaging you and hearing your feedback. Perhaps someone doesn't agree with our thesis there, and that's perfectly fine. But we'll be right back in just a minute after we do our monologue. And again, you're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery, and we're going to get right into it tonight. All right. Again, we're talking from the topic, how economics impact urban American culture. Genesis 1:26, very familiar passage of scripture, says, "And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth." In the text, the writer suggests that man has an inherent control over the natural resources in, on, above, and under the earth. Knowledge of such power should be a vital part of unifying people as one community, and as they strive to share a culture, a common way of life. In such case, every man and woman in that community realizes the fact that he has no need to beg, to steal, or to borrow from anybody, but rather operates from a divine and instinctive intrinsic right to rule the earth and all of its natural resources. Now, the biblical concept of economics, we've shared this before in a previous show, but I'm reiterating it because of our focus tonight, is related to the Greek word oikonomia, which primarily signifies a household that is managed, the administration of affairs within that household, the arrangement and distribution or dispensation of such resources. Biblically, that's what we talk about when we talk about economics, coming from the Greek word. The word economy is used with the intention to stress a focal point, and that focal point that God's divine enterprise has been invested in man, as suggested by the text, such that man can manage, control, and distribute the resources, not just in America, but of the world. Unfortunately, there are some problems and reasons why mankind, and particularly young black males in urban America, are at one another's throats, ready to pull a pistol just so they can eat. What we can see is it's not absolutely necessary. Now, a culture is a way of life. Okay? For every culture in the world, there is a driving force that keeps that way of life unified, keep those people in that culture as one. Okay? And one of the major driving forces for that culture, as we're talking about tonight, is the existence of some sort of economic system that provides for the sustaining of that people and their shared way of life. As related to urban America in the plight of too many who find themselves on the fringes of destruction, on the periphery of all that a society has to offer. What we see is the manifestation of most negative and destructive things. Now, I'm not talking about everybody, but again, the reality is too many face this reality. There are triggers, though, socioeconomic factors that trigger off certain behaviors that lock you out of opportunities, individuals out of opportunities, and cause them to be counterproductive. In an ideal situation, people control the economics of their community, as opposed to being to the reverse. They may live in a neighborhood, but they are controlled by some other economic factors. It's possible for you to live in a neighborhood. Yes, in fact, in many cases, that's all people do is live in somebody's neighborhood. But they lack ownership of their own community. People don't own a community unless they control the economic variables. In other words, they have the wealth and the control of the resources to control the schools, to control the grocery stores, to control the politics of their community, who represents you, and you are in a position to tell people and hold them accountable to what you want, primarily because you have the resources. Concept of supply and demand dictates the latter. Now, when you bring in and control the flow of goods and services, and the hood, all young cats understand and seem to think they control is dope, and all the other negative resources that come that way. But guess what? You're not even controlling that. Because when the man decides that they want to roll up on you and blue light you, bye-bye. Right? What we're talking about is how economics, and that's what we're going to be talking about tonight, control or impacts people's way of life. But more importantly, if you lack understanding or you don't have an economic system by which you are actively participating and that you engaged in and involved, you find yourself always at the whim of somebody else. And the quickest way to make a little change, to get you a little something, is to do something that often has been deemed illegal by someone else who controls the community. All right? But education, as we talked about, is pivotal because it provides information, knowledge, and guidance for young people from a young age to their families. Now, as I mentioned, we're going to be talking about theology, that last pillar that we've identified, next week. And we're going to pick up this conversation on Thursday. And by the way, I'll be in St. Louis airing live. We endeavor to air live there. We probably won't live stream, but we will have our regular show, and we'll pick up there. But my point is, lest I digress, we are in a position where when you try to understand why it is people are angry that they don't have, and they feel as though I've been left out, I've been overlooked, I've been stepped over, well, the truth of the matter is, at some point when you grow up, you must learn to take control of your own resources and opportunity. And if you don't, somebody else controls those things. All right. That's the short of our monologue tonight. Now, phone lines are open. I want to give you an opportunity to call us here and share with us your ideas, 657-383-0944. We got Pastor Ricky Waller on the line with us, and my good friend Nicole is with us as well. Let me go to Pastor Waller. How you doing, sir?
Hey, I'm good. How you doing there, Pastor Dockery?
Mighty fine, mighty fine. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Nicole, how are you, darling?
By the grace of God, I am hanging in here. I'm blessed by the favor. I thank the Lord all for
right.
all he's doing.
Okay.
How you doing,
Cole? I believe you're going to preach on me now.
Well, all right.
I like that. What do you think about the monologue, Nicole? Where did I go wrong?
You didn't go nowhere wrong. It's just what can we do and what we going to do?
Okay.
Because they say we ready to ride or picket, but then all of a sudden we do it for a day or two, and then we go back home and act like nothing never happened.
We sure told
them. Because we don't see the results right then and there, so we give up so easy.
So true. That's so true. And look, after we done ride and picketed, we done tow up where we have to live. Now, who's going to fix that back up? And you understand what I'm saying? The places you go to buy your food all the time, the places you go to the cleaners and all those other businesses that you rely on, you done tore it up.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to come and fix it up after you done tore it up? What about that, Pastor Walker?
I think you said it all when you said that, you know, when you're up under the authority of someone else that's controlling you know, where you stand and what you do and things like that. You know, I look at it on a deeper level because I ease inside the Word of God and seen some things, and I found out that the Word of God says that the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof and all that dwells in it. So since that's the case, that means that we have rights. And when you have a right and don't know it, it's much different than having a right and knowing about it. So I wonder whether you have rights or not and just afraid to act on it. I would be the first to say in my ignorance, I didn't know, you know, because I was captured into the mindset of, you know, of a chemical that was controlling. So I didn't have no knowledge about what to do with a whole lot of money. I was just doing what a fool would do with a lot of money. And I admit to it. There's nothing wrong with me and, you know, confessing the truth because that's the only thing that was able to free me up.
Right.
It got to a point where I didn't even need money anymore. I felt a lot better. You know, and that means I'm always back to square one, but I can see clearly now. You know, some
that the rain is
called. I can definitely see it now, you know. And it made a lot of sense. You say if we don't have a right to orchestrate how we're going to demonstrate in our community how things are going to go, and you know, and always depend on someone else to come in, and I think it's detrimental, you know, to what can be done. I would say.
Very good
topic tonight that you know you're dealing with.
Thank you, sir.
Some of the things is nothing too hard for God. I just believe that as I said, I wasn't able to see that then, and that's with money. So, but without it, again, you know, I think it's all right to, you know, have a way of looking at it and say, well, I'm going back to square one and do all that I can do to make a difference. And if everybody could do that, man, it would be a whole lot better for us. The solution is wrapped up in it.
You know, Pastor and Sister Nicole, I know I've personally talked to a lot of, not just males, but females too, Nicole. And they're pretty frustrated because it just seems like other people are prospering, they're happy. And then when they do what they know to do, all they've learned to do, sometimes it's not the right thing, right? But then someone questions or tells them that that's not right, and they discourage them. Then they say, well, I want to be happy too. I want to be able to feel like the way I live is fulfilling and I'm somebody and I'm a member of society, of the community. But people are always telling me, you follow what I'm saying, Nicole? Who's supposed to teach the baby in the culture, in your community? Who's supposed to teach young people what they need to know to become economically stable, to provide for themselves ultimately. Nicole? You there, Nicole?
Yes, I do. And some of those don't even have good wisdom either. And I'm not going to lie to you.
Okay.
And it's kind of a hard feeling, but I'm being honest with you. Some of those don't have good wisdom neither. So,
that's so true.
But the thing about it is, it was something I wanted to share with you.
Okay.
And I forgot what it is. Lord help me. Resources. That's the key too. I think if we had enough resources and enough information to offer the individual, it'll probably be okay, because a lot of people, just like the topic, I'm going to go back from last time we talked, you know, the young man I was sharing with him about the felony. Okay, I forgot to get out. Well, he said it was a lie and such, that's just not true. And it is true, because it's a lot of people, they do have felonies, they don't get no good high-paying job. So, but I know when you tap into God's realm, he will give you what you need. But the thing about it is, too, still at the same time, I wish the young man would have offered some resources to how he was able to be where he is today. You see what I'm saying? To be a felon. But
yes.
That's
okay.
Another thing. You know, resources. We need resources. We need guidance counselors. We need somebody that's really equipped and that's God-fearing, and not somebody that's going to start our babies away. Because that's the thing. We have people in power, people in authority, but they are abusing their power and their authority. And I'm being honest with you.
It happens too often. You're right. And you're absolutely right. Our friend is here with us, and I'm going to welcome to the conversation tonight, 1098. And I hope you heard her comment. And tonight I want you to patiently, she's asking you, essentially, what are some things you can say to young guys who are of the mindset we lack resources, honest resources, and that's why we are always on the grind and engaging in what is considered to be illegal or a nefarious activity. Can you speak to that for us, 1098? Can you talk to us? Pretend you're talking to these young guys and you explain to them how, even if you got a felony, you're coming out of what you can do to improve yourself. Take the floor for a second, 1098.
Okay, well, you know, I mean, even down to my nephews and things of that nature, you know, when they were coming up, they know that I had been in a penitentiary, you know, several times. And I always told them, look, you all go stay in school, get your education.
Mm.
And as they grew older, you know, which they had a good father, you know, which is my baby brother, you know. But the thing is this. I have to understand, you have to use everything at your disposal, even down to a driver light. Even down to a driver light. You know, if you have a Class D, try to turn it to a Class D with an F endorsement. You use everything to your disposal. Number one, I always tell them, get your education. You know, as stated when I was in prison, you know, that was my main function, you know, trying to ensure that the guys got their GEDs and things of that nature. This is what you can tell them to do. But the thing is this, a lot of people, they want something for nothing. They don't want to basically pick up a book and do anything. You know, any and everything that you need to get to in life, it basically concerns what? A book. And see, these are the things that they don't want to do.
Right.
You know.
Okay.
And again, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I apologize. I cut you off. I apologize.
You know, use everything at your disposal. You know, prison. Ma'am, you have a lot of guys that want to do well and get out and do well because I don't want to go back into what they came out of. But a lot of people, they don't have any intentions of change, and this is why they resort back to the antisocial behavior. Now, I listened to the young lady. She was talking about McDonald, ma'am, in that penitentiary. Guys break their back, work like a dog, and don't get number $20 a month. You know, in the Department of Corrections. You know, and they talk about a job paying $7.25. If this is what I had to do, I would do it. But the only thing that you can do is lead them in the right direction. For number one, concerning education. You know, I mean, if you got GED, you know, go to college. I don't care if you work with someone else. I mean, just go. You know, just get more education and use everything at your disposal to learn how to do more than one thing. Yeah. I don't know if I'm answering your question correctly or not.
No, I think you're right on point, Doc, because the truth is, you know, nobody promised you that it was going to be easy or the same from the time you went in to the time you come back. In fact, you kind of lost some time while you were locked up from the free world.
Exactly.
So you got to reintegrate yourself, and it's going to take you a little bit more to catch up with certain things than others who have not been taken away from the normal processes of society. So come
I'm
out with that understanding.
Made that statement. But listen to this. 97.5% of the guys that go to prison, guess what they do with the majority of their time?
What's
they play poker. They play poker. They lift weights. You know, basketball. And things of that nature. When it comes to education, they don't want it. They do not want it. Basically, the same way that they go in is the same way that they come out. And see, there's no excuse. You know,
okay.
I mean, I used to tell guys all the time, man, look, man, don't leave out here the same way that you came in. You know, and see, this is the problem, but yet and still, when they get back out of here into society, they light up in the prisons number of years, and this is all they done. Played poker, basketball, anything that's unrealistic. The better
I guess.
Nothing.
Right. But can I ask you a question, Doc? Because I'm gonna ask you a real good question, and this is real. Have you ever thought about how some people are demon possessed and they just don't know it? Like identity really stole, and it's gonna take more than a miracle to recover these people's identity because of why they have been in this cycle for so long that it's not like they don't want to break loose. It's not like a person holding a gun just saying that. It's just their brain is just really off into this cycle.
Hold on one second. I see you, Professor. Hold on one second. Nicole,
yes, sir.
I want to address that. Let me recognize.
Because I know people make excuses too, but I'm being honest with you too, because some people make excuses.
That's true. Nicole, hold one second, please. I hear what you're saying. I want to respond to your question. Let me recognize new caller, Professor Robson, who's joined us tonight. I think he was trying to say something. Were you trying to say something, Professor?
Yes, Pastor Dockery. I want to share, and I hear the comment, and one of the things that I continue to stress is that there are solutions out there that work. And as an example, this Thursday, I am reaching out and I'm working with a group from the Tennessee Prison for Women and individuals that have gone through a program where the recidivism rate is 7% based on a program that's been up and running in Texas for 15 years. And so how do we... And I understand that there are these other issues, but how do we identify solutions that work? And 7% recidivism rate, that's very, very impressive. how do we take that and how do we duplicate that in our communities?
Okay, okay. That's important. That's important. Let me, if you allow me to, let me address the poll question. I think it was a relevant question. Now, there are some people who are mentally deranged and mentally unstable. You said they're demon possessed. I'm going to say mentally unstable for whatever reason. Okay? Those people, that needs to be addressed. But I'm going to tell you, Nicole, from experience, that probably 95 to 98% of these guys that we see in the street, if you put a little fire behind them, they got enough sense to jump and holler, ouch. That means you can reach them, and they can modify their behavior. Now, if I took a fire or stuck a pin in their behind and they didn't say ouch, oh, something is wrong with them. They got a real serious problem. They need to be a problem. But if you can scream and run, we can do something for you. And that's 95 to 98% of them that's out there, I'm going to wedge it to say. But the truth of the matter is, if I make a mistake, and Pastor Waller will tell you this, anybody that makes a mistake, that doesn't count you out or make you a bad person. What it says is you have work to do to correct that. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things some people are looking for are reparations. And all reparations mean is to correct what was done from the context of slavery and economics, to correct an ill that was done toward people, right? It doesn't mean to just give you everything. It means to correct that, to correct what the government has done wrong. But the truth of the matter is you have got to take the lead. That's what 1098 is saying. You've got to take the lead on correcting yourself first. Yes, the government have fault, things they need to do, but at the end of the day, if you don't do for yourself, you're going to find yourself missing. Now, I want to do this, if y'all don't mind. Dr. Claude Anderson, this professor of sociology and economics, I believe he's retired now, the question was asked of him, what happened to our inheritance? So in the question, there's an assumption that you got some coming to you. And we tell young people that you are royal people, you're important, and you have an inheritance, and you're worth something, right? That's what we often tell them. But listen to what Dr. Anderson, his reply to that question.
Well, what are you passing on? We spend most of our lives focusing politically on things that are non-inheritable. When the Civil Rights Movement started, you talk about your integration years, you're a product. Generation. What did your generation focus on? You focus on welfare, food stamps, public housing, okay, civil rights, generation, preference of treatment, getting a job. How do you inherit that? Those things. What's their inheritance? And a typical white person right now, as an example, wealthy, they live on 87% of their income comes from unearned income. They're getting from unearned income. They're getting from Wall Street, from the stock market. They're getting it from rental payments for property owners. They're getting it from trust accounts. They got unearned income coming. Where is your black unearned income? What's that going to be? Food stamp, welfare, unemployment compensation? Where are you going to get unearned income from?
Now, 1098.
Yes, sir.
Is he going off the rail now? Is Dr. Anderson wrong?
No, he's not wrong. You know, he's not wrong at all. You know, that is a good point. This is what a lot of whites do. You know, they got CD accounts and things of that nature also,
right,
that they offer. You know, I mean, it's a whole lot to that, and I agree 100%. As I was stating last week, the average guys, they keep going in and out of the penitentiary, and then once they get up to a certain age, or they begin to have back problems and things of that nature, the first thing that they want to do is go and try to they'll go and file for disability. Now I know a whole lot of them that are like that.
Trying
to flip off the system.
So
now,
when do we start teaching young girls and boys 1098? Look, when you come up, look to start working to position yourself to have an account and not looking for welfare. The average young lady, if they get pregnant, with all respect, they get pregnant, the first thing they do is they go and get what? Welfare.
Welfare.
And then if they have another child, they go and get what? Welfare. Now, is that not perpetuating a negative, destructive cycle? And again, I'm not putting them down because I come from that experience. I have sisters that experience.
Hold on, Pastor.
Let me. Right,
I'm gonna share something with you that's real.
Come on.
Some of them can have a husband that's in the Army and got a good job and making good money, and by them being a couple, they don't qualify for those assistance. But you know what they will say? We separated. So they cheating the system.
Yes,
you see
ma'am.
What I'm saying? It just don't make sense to me that we got this cycle going on, and it's ridiculous because some of these people really do need this help and really do want to help just for temporary so they can get out. Because I'm one of them, and I can speak for that. I thank the Lord that I ain't on no Section 8. I thank the Lord I'm not in no low-income apartment. It took a lot for me. I had to decide, get up off my butt, rain, sleet, or snow, to make it what I think today.
Wow. See, that's what I'm talking about. See, this is what we're talking about. Keep on, ma'am. We're listening. Go ahead.
You're on it, Nicole.
And I'm serious. I don't got rained on, been drenched and everything, but I did whatever it took for me to get where I am today. I never asked anybody for anything. But sometimes people will see me out there in the rain and pass me right by. But God will always send somebody to give me a ride. And I thank the Lord for that. But you know, in the process, I tell you, taking advantage of, some people do take advantage of the system. And the people that do take advantage of the system, I look at it as like the enemy. The enemy, he don't mess with people that he got. He mess with people that he want. You understand what I'm saying? Because here I am today, I'm doing everything by the law and by the book. Don't get me wrong. I come from a bad background myself. But it took a lot to find out who I was, because my identity was stolen at one time, you know.
But I
found my identity, you know. So
let me go here, Nicole, because I'm in agreement with you. The issue here is a cultural mindset that says somebody else has to provide for me, and I'm unable to do for myself. And see, this is why this thing perpetuates itself from one generation to the next. And you're always saying that somebody is keeping me down. They're holding me back. I can't ever seem to get to do any better. But the reality is, if you have a lifestyle where people share this mentality, what happens is you don't develop wealth through economic means, because you always rely on something or someone else to provide it for you. You're only going to go as far as they give you if that's what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Professor, what say you to that, Professor?
I love marketing. And my master's in marketing. And at the end of the day, it's about the messages that we deliver, that we advocate, that we support, and what are those messages? Mm-hmm. And how do we craft the messages in a way that's designed to drive the outcomes that are going to help us as a community? And so we know what to do. Let's just do those things. It's very frustrating.
Hold on 1 second, Nicole. Let him finish.
It's very frustrating because we have the talent, we have the skills, we have the knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
We have the expertise to accomplish greatness. Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
Right.
That's
we've overcome so much, and we continue. Then how do we leverage the strengths, the talents, the skills that allowed us to overcome all of those challenges in order to do better?
For one,
I'm gonna be honest with you. I talked to somebody no longer than a month ago down to the juvenile system, and he was a probation officer. And I asked him about the program down there. I said, do y'all have people coming in from the outside that experienced, going in the juvenile system or doing something wrong and got themselves in a bad situation who have turned it around? I said, do y'all have those type of people coming in to try to, to be some guidance to them and to hear where they've been at and what they've been through and where they are today? He said, no. He said, that's how they start trying this new program. And he said, to be honest with you, it ain't even working. He said, because to me, all they're trying to do is just lock them up. And
right.
I said, are you serious? And that in itself is a hurting feeling, because incarceration, first of all, I heard something from a white male that really spoke a lot of sense, and he said, They got mad at him because he took some inmates to church.
And
he said, do you know the story behind where I'm going with that?
Yes, it was a sheriff.
But
it was a sheriff.
Yes, sir. That's the type of stuff that these guys need. They need to be recorrected and stuff, and need to know that God do exist. They need programs outside of education. Education is very, very important. Don't get me wrong, but they need something more than just education. They need to know that they love. They need to know there's somebody.
Reverend Dockery.
You know,
Reverend Dockery, I ask a question. What is the plan?
All right. So now we're introducing this conversation about the impact of economics on your culture, on your way of life. The plan is for, I know for Thursday, I'm going to offer you seven lessons that any parent can teach their children from birth. Now, we can't turn it around for those people that got cut up already. Hopefully they'll learn from what we have to offer. But if you have young children right now, particularly African-American males who are at risk of going wrong, getting locked up, I'm going to offer you seven things you can do to instill economic values in them and have them grow up working toward perfecting that in their life. And I guarantee you that they'll be successful. And not only in America, if they went to Nairobi, Africa, they'll be successful there. If they went to Germany, France, they'll be successful there. Because these are principles principles that successful people use. Go ahead, Professor, and then I'll come back to you.
And so, Reverend,
and I want to get past
what is the expectation? You mentioned that here's something that works.
Mm-hmm.
What is the expectation of the people who are listening? What are we supposed to do? Is there something that you're asking us to do and to report on as it relates to this specific, system that works? What are we supposed to do with this system?
Now, are you a parent? Hold on, Nicole. Yeah. Hold my hand, Nicole. Are you a parent? The people that I'm talking to, the question, this is a rhetorical question right now. I'm not really asking you to answer this directly. The question for you is, are you a parent? Do you want your child to be successful? If you don't know, are you willing to utilize the principles, the wealth principles, that can set your child up to be successful? Now, somebody may ask, Dockery, how you know that's going to work? It worked for the two I helped bring in the world. I didn't birth them, but I was there. I ain't going to tell you how I know I was there. But I was there. I participated. And so without going too much in detail toward tonight, because that's going to be the focus of our show Thursday night, what I'm saying to you is that when you avail yourself to the information, you can change whatever is not working for you. Now, there are a lot of good people who come from dire poverty-stricken circumstances. If they knew this information, their life would be enhanced, and they would take advantage of it. Some that won't. There's some that won't. Some that won't. But hold on, guys. Let me, Pastor Wally, what say you, man? You've been quiet on me.
Yeah, man. I think you've been listening, man. I think going for you, brother, you know. I tell you, you're right on target, and you have a heart to do what's right. I know. And, you know, I'm that kind of guy that if a solution is out there, mm-hmm. and I would be like, Professor, I'd be wanting to know, does it work? And that's where I'm at. That's where I've always been. Even when I was in the streets, that's the way I was. So it hadn't anything changed other than my direction. And the altar, I know it works, you know, because it's been tried on me. So I don't I don't want to deviate from what I've been assigned to do, and that is to make a difference, you know. And that's what I keep hearing is what is the solution. And when you have that, you apply it. And that's what I think is more effective, because the talk has been going on for many years, I'm sure.
Yes, it
is. Even when I was down in a bow-down position, you know, with the blood control of me, I think there was a lot of talk going on there. And, you know, since I discovered something in the book, and it says that is that anything too hard for God? So if God is in the will, if God is in the plan, then it's no way, no matter who's been doing whatever they've been doing, no matter how much they're doing, if you put God in it, you can start right where you are in order to get where you're going. So I think, you know, it's a good thing that you're bringing it to the table, and people are voicing their opinions and things. But again, you know me, I don't be too big on the opinion, because I might be wrong. And, you know, but the truth will make us free. And that's what we need, the truth, man.
Well, let me say this, Pastor. Two things, and I'll open the floor to you guys. I want to explain to you where I'm coming from. Now, I understand where you and Professor Robinson, you all are process guys. Y'all looking for process. And I'm with that. But I know it's important for, as we introduce the conversation, us to have background and understanding and context. And that's really what we were trying to do by introducing this two-part dialogue. Now, I wrote a book entitled Framework for Fatherly Instructions. Wrote it back in 2006, okay? And in there, I identified some key things that boys in particular need to be taught from the time they're able to start walking, all right? And these things will ultimately result in certain successes for them when they get to be of the age of the legal age or the pejorative age, where society is expecting them to know how to behave and how to provide for themselves. If you use it, it'll work for you. I'm going to get to that. I'm just not there yet. Now, part of the reason we're having this conversation tonight and during this month of March is I've had people who come to me and they said my son is in trouble. Can you help him? I said, well, sure. And they said, well, he won't do this and he won't do that and he and I can't get him. I said, well, now here's the reality. I can't make your son do anything. But if he wants to start over and be reborn, if you will, and get it correct, he can't allow his age and pride to get in the way of future successes. Right. What happens is 1098, the older these cats get, the more they shut down on themselves, and they just lock themselves in their negative thinking, and they become a defense mechanism for them. But if you humble yourself, you can break the cycle for yourself.
That's right.
That's the truth.
Hey, Pastor, you,
yes, sir.
You know, if you
yes, sir.
That, I like to say this, man, because you have been a great example for that. You know, you, I would say somebody that specialized in it. You know, I thank God because I had a chance to meet your kids and to see what you have done with them, man. And so, whom better to be able to make a platform and know that it worked, you know, other than you. I mean, that would be, I would vote for you quick, you know. And
well,
you know, I just because it's the truth. Now, I'm not just saying that just to be saying it. It is the truth. And the only thing you can free is the truth. And we need more of it. And then you're taking time out. You've already done your thing with your kids. And you're still taking time out to reach out to others. Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. I mean, you have to have a heart to do that, you know. And I just want you to know, man, you deserve your props, and there's nothing wrong with it. You know, I heard, I'm going to turn it back over at this. I heard years ago, back before I even changed my life, there was a song that said, stand up and give credit where it's due. There's nothing wrong with
man.
That. You know, you deserve it, and you might as well accept it and embrace it and be all right with it because we need more of that.
Right.
You know, and I just thought I'd
I appreciate that. You know, the reality is you can get rich off of the efforts of others. And really that's what economics involved is you having a system of wealth generation and you use the labor of other people to produce that for yourself. And, you know, but at some point, the people ought to be able to provide for themselves, you know, not necessarily just work for somebody else, but start their own business and their own enterprise. We've got, if we don't know, what I found out, Pastor Waller, it's a lot of good people who simply don't know. And it don't matter that they 45, 50, 60 years old, they still don't know. If you don't know, you don't what?
You don't know.
I'm going to pass the doctor.
Hold on one second. Let me go to 1098 and then you, Professor. Let me go to 1098. He was going to say then you, Professor. Hold your thought, please. 1098, go ahead right quick.
Okay. I was just listening to, you know, the statement, does it work? Let me give you an instance. I remember when I was incarcerated, they had this job at a National Guard Armory, you know.
Okay.
And it was a radiology lab. Now, I had been on that compound about 2 or 3 years, and every time those guys went out that gate, it wasn't nothing but white guys. Okay, so you know, like I say, you know, I was touring, plus I was teacher's aide, basically I was running it. So I went over to the job tracking office, and I told the job tracking coordinator, I said, look, I said I want to go to work. In the National Guard Armory. You know what? She looked at me. She stood up. She turned around and looked at me. Gave me a nasty look and said, can you do algebra? Can you do geometry? And, you know, her assistant turned around and told her, that's okay. You know? So, went on and put me on the list. And the guy came from the National Guard Armory. Now, you know, I knew, again, I was putting myself on the line, but see, I knew it was going to work. Knowing it's going to work. So what I did, the guy came from a National Guard Armory, you know, with the test. It had 20 questions on it. But when they called me in operation, it was 4 white guys sitting on the operation steps and asked me, they said, you going in there to do that test? I said, yeah. So I walked on the steps. So when I opened the door, it was a black corporal. He started laughing. He said, I know what you finna go in there and do. He started laughing. So when I go up in the door, now, when I go in, the guy had me the test sheet, 20 questions. So what I was doing, look, I was calling out the answers before I even write them. I was calling out. Now, up comes the job tracking coordinator, the black woman. She comes busting through the door. You know what the guy told her? He's finished. She already passed.
Wow.
My objective was to change the face of that work crew. And this is exactly what I did. I had 4 guys that I was touring in at night in math. And I sent all 4 of them over there to take that test. And guess what? black stars going out the gate. Will it work? Yes, it will work. Then depending on what you want to work.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. What you want to work. A result. You know, even when I went back to the dormitory, you know, I lied on my bed. You know, I had old Pokey with me, so, you know, I wasn't worried about nothing. White guy came on and he said, you passed? I told him, I said, yeah. Turned around and walked out because he knew it was over, too. See?
Mm-hmm.
Will it work? What can you change? That's the main thing. We have a lot of different organizations here in Nashville, throughout the United States of America. You have churches, have GED classes at night. Now, I agree with the female, but my point was this. Yes, you need more than education. You also need to know moral values, and you basically get your moral values when you go to church, when you turn yourself over to God. Now, I'm a hole right there, but with it work, you know what?
And with that, we're going to go to
a lot of people
to
say I'm radical.
With that way they call you out, Cat. We're going to go to Professor right quick. Go ahead, Professor Robinson.
I wanted to put a plug in for SCORE, and it ties perfectly into the conversation. And SCORE is an organization of retired executives. I'm a mentor. I'm a part of the leadership team. And our tax dollars are going towards paying for space for these volunteer individuals. SCORE is an organization that's there to help small businesses grow. And for every black person that is thinking about a business, that has a business, we're paying tax dollars, utilize these resources. They tend to be old white men, but you know what? It's a resource that we're paying for, and we can get more people that look like us to get into those ranks. But it's at the end of the day, just piggybacking, there are solutions out there. There are a lot of options, and we just need to find ways to help people gain easier access to those solutions. Religious, be they secular, not. There are a lot of solutions. Let's do our best to help people gain access to those solutions.
Okay. Great point. Great point. Nicole, you've been trying to say something in about 2 minutes, about a minute and a half, because we want to go to about 30 minutes outside of the show being over. Go ahead, and then I want to introduce our next topic. Go ahead, Nicole.
I just wanted to say, too, also that we as grown people and people that are in our right state of mind and that is willing to help anybody, we ought to be held accountable. Also, if we see something wrong or see something we can help, let's at least put something, sow a seed. You know, Pastor Wallace sowed a seed in the knee, you know, and they're looking. So I'm just saying, if we see somebody or see something, if it ain't nothing, but we have to stop our car because we see somebody standing outside with a sign or something, sow a seed. God loves you. You are somebody. Or give them something, some kind of encouragement to let them know that whatever they're going through is only temporary, you know? And if you can also, if you got a resource, keep resources, pamphlets with you and stuff, because some people don't know, and without any kind of information, what they're gonna do? They're gonna keep doing the same thing. So if we got a resource pamphlets and stuff, we can pass out to people, and get people together. Of course, things can get better. We shouldn't be the type of people that's always gossiping about the next person's child. Oh, her child don't got locked up. Because don't nobody know. Just like me, I didn't never know how my mama felt until I felt my mama pain when my child got locked up. You understand what I'm saying? Some people don't know what you feel unless you walk in those shoes. So that's the reason why I'm saying is offer pamphlets, resources, information, 24-hour church line, something other than just saying, okay, you know.
All right. Got you. Listen, we got about 29 minutes here. You're listening to Talk Straight. Tonight our topic is how economics impact urban American cultures. I'm going to do a brief break, if y'all bear with us, and then we're going to hear from Dr. Claude Anderson as he answers the question, what determines opportunities? What determines opportunities? And we'll pick that conversation back up. And there's a question that I want to ask Pastor Waller when we come back, because he wrote a book and he talked about missing out on some opportunities. And I think he may be in a position to kind of give us some insight on that. Give me a few minutes. We'll be right back. This is Talk Straight. The number 657-383-0944. Get in where you fit in.
Hey, they call me Poop. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up and be a man. But I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked where I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
BFC Institute needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is bfcinstitute.com. Simply click the red sticker for details.
You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery. We're grateful to have you join us tonight. We're talking from the topic, how economics impact urban American culture. And before we went on the break, I mentioned that we're going to hear from Dr. Claude Anderson, and you heard him. Your opportunities are determined by what you do. Is that right, Pastor Waller?
Oh, yeah, I agree with that, without a doubt. You know,
who's going to stop you from doing it? Pastor, who's going to stop you from doing it?
The individual. You know, if you don't know any better, such as I myself, nobody make me do what I ended up doing. But, you know, because I'm the one that was doing my thing in the yard by myself. So, ain't nobody make me do that. And then suddenly I was looking and seeing what others were doing, and all of a sudden I'm doing what they're doing. And they didn't force me. They did not force me at all. You know, even though it was right before me. And so after I, you know, got caught up and got loose from it, you know, and then started to do things according to the will of God, you know, it says to this end, I also labor, striving according to his working, which works in me mightily. And see, if he's not working in me, I'm not going to do anything, because I cannot do anything unless he's going to give me the help that I need. And so it's amazing, you know, that I have a lot of friends out there. And so I like to share this, if you don't mind. You know, my interaction with my friends, you know, had changed from a provider of destruction to a messenger providing a solution, which is something that I heard brought up on the table tonight in conversation. You know, being able to be a messenger and a provider with a solution is a good thing to know. You know, they still show the respect they always had for me. However, now it was a respect for what I represented and the new way I was living. So, in other words, when something works and you know it works, you start to apply it in your life and you become a part of you. And that's the thing that you want to always remember. And that, I had to do that for me because I was no longer staying free from drugs for myself because I knew how to do it. I knew it worked. Now it's a lot of people that don't know how to do it that need to know. You know, Nicole said something about how I sowed a seed in her. You know, she shared that. And, you know, that's what it's about. I mean, it's about, you know, seeing hurting people and with an opportunity, you reach out to them and what they do with it is on them. And she was able to do something with it and now she's doing better, so that's a good thing. And every now and then, you know, God will let you see the fruit of your labor. And it's not for no brownie points or anything. It's just the thought of knowing, man, just think, you know, if I hadn't have sowed a seed in her, you know, would she have gotten sick? I don't know. But she did. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and it don't mean anybody is on drugs or anything or and have to be on drugs to help somebody, but you still have to do whatever you know how to do and make sure you're doing it according to what you need. And so I got what I know from the Lord, and, you know, he wanted me to go out and strive and let him do the work through me, man. So it's a beautiful thing, Pastor Doctor. I wrote a book. And, of course, you know, this book is available. And if anybody, you know, were to support it, you know, it's going to help, you know, what you're doing. And every now and then I ask you, sometimes I'm just the kind of person that I don't even mention it because I like to stay humble. But it's nothing that I can do with these books. I got one book. So, that's all I need. You know,
it's
so,
a useful
tool.
It's a useful tool.
Yes.
I think Professor wanted to ask you a question and make a statement.
Yeah, Pastor, I'm going to go back to my comfort zone, and at the end of the day, in the next year, in the next 3 years, in the next 5 years, in the next 10 years, what's our plan? How many lives, and how are we going to positively impact these lives? We have a lot of really great things that are going on in our communities. However, when you look at the overall impact, it's not really changing the outcomes in a significant, in a positive way. And so we come together to say it's 5 million, it's 10 million, it's 20 million, by this date, we have to have a plan.
Well, let me ask you a question, Professor. Let me pose
a
question to you. You seem to quantify success.
Yes.
What's the magic number of success, Professor?
I don't know what that number is right now. What I look at is for African Americans. Let's look at the total number of individuals that are, you know, experiencing situations that we say aren't as productive as we would like them to be, and then what do we need to do in order to change the arc? And so I thank people that are doing things that are impacting 10 lives, that are impacting 100 lives. I thank them, but at the end of the day, we have to impact millions of lives if we are going to change the overall trajectory and the outcomes within our communities. I thank everybody for the things that they do, but we have to do a heck of a lot more if we're going to change the overall outcomes. I don't have a number.
Now,
I just know it's a lot more than what we're doing now.
I get you, but let me
and
say
the
that.
The biggest target would be the internet. That's the biggest target. The biggest target would be the internet. All of these websites that you fail to realize, this is what people is on constantly every day. Facebook,
right.
Tango,
right.
Tag. It's a numerous of websites that they own constantly every day. And this is how you can target some of the people.
All right. Hold your position, Nicole. Hold your position. So let me say this. Now, I've been pastoring now for close to 22 years. And one of the things I discovered, and I'm not just a behind the pulpit holler at you, pastor, make you scared not to go to hell. Okay? I like to keep it 100 with people. And what I've discovered in my 2 decades plus experience of pastoring, everybody don't want to be saved. Everybody don't want to change. Everybody is not serious about the good that you have to offer them. So I stopped trying to put a number on how many people I said. Now, I do have a number that we are preparing for, but I'm not going to be disappointed if I offer you what's good for you and you decide, I don't want that because
right.
I can't make
it. Right.
So I'm following the whosoever will philosophy. Let them come.
Wow.
That's
it.
Listen,
what about that 1098?
And Pastor?
Go ahead, Professor.
I do have, you know, not the perfect number, but I said it in 6 years we want to and we're going to engage with 10 million African-American students.
Okay.
And
okay.
So I think that, you know, just based on knowing the numbers and understanding what we need in order to really change the curve, we could come up with, it's not going to be an exact number, but, you know, I think 42 million of us, if we can, when we get to 10 million kids and to 5 million adults, that's going to be, we will change the curve. It's not a perfect number.
I want you to know I agree with you that somebody's going to be impacted. Somebody's going to want it, right? That's why we do what we do, because there's somebody out there who's in need. I agree with you 100%. But I just don't want us to be disappointed on or under any disillusion that you're going to make everybody do what's right. Because that's like sending a poodle dog out to chase rabbits. That dog will not hunt.
I don't agree with myself 100% of the time. Never, ever. So I can't expect anybody. I don't agree with myself 100% of the time.
Okay.
I do not agree with myself 100% of the time. So.
All right.
The rest is just insanity if you do.
Okay. Let me go to 1098. What are we going to say, 1098?
Yeah. Actually, you said it all, but let me add this. You have a compound of 500 people.
Okay.
After Scottish was coming out to the compound, this is when they were letting inmates, you know, take up college courses and get degrees. Out of a whole compound of 500 people, guess what?
Mm-hmm.
Only 5 people were in that class.
Mm-hmm.
American Baptist College, Theology College. Now, you had your little Bible thumpers. They run around with crosses sewn on their pants every time you see them. They got a Bible in their hand and things of that nature.
Okay.
But when school time came, when questions was being asked, what do you think about outcasts? You didn't see outcasts down there in the churches, basically. You didn't see me running around with a Bible in my hand every time you saw me and almost throwing up these in here kung fu signs and, you know, hooty hoo or whatever. But he was a guy asked me, he said, man, I don't never see you read no Bible. I don't see you coming down into church service and saying that, you know, yeah, you know what I told him? Get thee behind me, Satan. I've never been to one of town besides
and
not only that, check this out now. Religion, you know, which there's that's a theology college, yeah, you know, American Baptist College. Now you had one senator, Bob Gordon, went to Congress complaining, and guess what they did? Now seeing a grown man cry, I saw a grown doctor cry, which he told us what was going on. Yeah, they stopped it. But see, going back to the what the young lady was saying, that I guess the sheriff took the inmates to church. Well, American Baptist College coming out on the compound. And guess what, Reverend Docker?
What's that?
A lot of times, I would be the only one left in class. Only one.
Wow.
Okay. You know, the second time that I seen a grown man cry, we had 15 guys that graduated. You had one guy that had took the GED test 15 times, and he finally passed it, and they gave him a certificate of merit. I'm sitting up there, you know, and all of a sudden my name was called. I said, what is this? And then they gave me a certificate of recognition.
Right. Well, you know what, 1098? I think it was the Ghetto Boys out of Houston that said, I never seen a grown man cry until I seen a grown man die.
The school principal, Stephen Headley, cried like a baby. Cried like a baby, you know.
Listen,
to see these guys graduating and things of that nature. But the thing is, when it comes to outcasts, the only someone that could stop me is myself.
That's right.
Even my children, I tell them, look, the only someone that can hold you back is yourself. My grandchildren tell them the same thing. Only thing ain't going to hold you back is yourself. You keep pushing. You stay focused. But the only someone that can stop you is yourself. White man can't stop me. Black man ain't never going to show ain't going to stop me. And I hope.
Amen.
I'm done.
Amen. All right. We got about 12 minutes. I want to throw this last question in there. Pastor Wallace, I'm glad you were able to make it back. I know you've been moving. I know you're moving and sticking. But I want to throw this last question in there before we go in this last 12 minutes we got. As black and white, Professor, seek to become more unified in America, what is needed to inspire angry, hungry, humiliated young males across urban America that peace and unity is worth working for? Professor, take that from me.
We have to find a way as a community, as a culture, as a country to tap into what young people feel is sexy. And how do we leverage that? And I'm a marketing person, so a lot of what I speak to is tied to marketing. It's how do you make things sexy? How do you make it popular? How do you make it things that they want to engage? My son, he's talking about the march tomorrow and all these schools across the country that are going to be taking kids that are going to be taking time out. It's how do you leverage the desire, the passions, and help them understand how they can accomplish things. Don't make it too complex. We are not that important. I am not that important. It's not that complex.
I see.
Let's help them to figure out how they can empower themselves to pursue their passions and to do things. And we have to be there to help them make it happen.
Wow. Well, say you said, Nicole, right quick. Go ahead, Nicole, right quick. I'm coming to you. Go ahead.
We also got to let them know that it's okay that they make mistakes, and they got to learn to forgive themselves, because we do have kids that walk around with guilt and all of that shame on their chest for so long, and they got to learn to forgive themselves, and they got to learn to let go, because the past is the past. We all have made some mistakes in the past. And once they can acknowledge that, I think that'll be a good goal too. Just learning to let them know forgiveness is the first step to success. Forgiveness.
Wow.
It's the first key to success.
Yes, ma'am. You know, Nicole, you I think you're right on it, because I find a lot of young people are trying to carry the guilt and responsibility of their parents and the elders' failures. And they don't even know how to manage all of that. They don't know how to manage all of that. It's not their fault. But they're trying to carry the weight up. You know, I never will forget, we had a little boy out there at the detention facility, and bless his heart, he was locked up, and he was still concerned about how they going to eat at home. Because they done took him off the street. He can't sell dope. He wasn't an addict going to eat at home. Son, that was never your responsibility from the get-go. And here you are,
the doctor,
trying to worry about how you're going to feed your family.
Not trying to cut y'all off, but this is another thing. If you can't shame, don't worry about what people say or think about you, because that's another thing that people deal with, worrying about what somebody say, worrying about what somebody feel. Because I was one of those people. I was scared to be walking and knowing I got to go to work, but I have to walk to work because I didn't have no car. But you know what? God told me, girl, if you don't get that shame up off your chest, and walk on to your job and do what you got to do and catch the bus or walk or whatever you have to do, you're going to make it.
Okay.
That's
okay.
Right.
Okay, well stated. Let me get – I got 8 minutes. Go ahead, Professor.
I just wanted to share just quickly. We shouldn't place a lot of the blame on the kids. I really think the blame needs to be focused on the adults, because we're the ones raising the kids.
Yes.
And you know, I just want to give you a real quick example. My wife has a real hard time, you know, because she's told my son that he shouldn't lie to her, and he told her that he can't tell her that he because for him to tell her that he can't lie is a lie, and she's having a hard time dealing with that. And so we need to acknowledge what we own and not just say it's about the kids.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know what, Professor? You got an honest young man right there.
You're right.
Because I know I get caught up in that way, Professor, my darn self. Well, it's amazing. Man, I think this is great dialogue. I'm gonna keep my promise Thursday night. We'll be traveling mode in St. Louis, but I do want to offer those seven things, those seven principles that I'm convinced can help anybody's child, if you use them now. And Outcast, I ain't trying to make nobody do nothing.
Can't
but
do that.
Whosoever will.
Exactly. Remember, you have 98% of them when they go to prison. All they do is waste their time on cars, dominoes, crap, anything just foolish. But when it comes to dodging books and putting something in their head, they don't do it. This is why they come out the same way they went in there. That's the same way they come out. This is something that when people are talking about prisons, this is something that they don't bring up, because in order for you, you can't be on the outside looking in. You're going to be on the inside looking and trying to get out. See, that's the major problem. And then they want to lie. Let me tell you something, Reverend Doctor, and I'm going to shush on this. I have seen a lot of guys, when they come to prison, they're uneducated. And when they get a job, their job is school. Guess what? They rather go to the hole and stay in the hole rather than go to school.
Wow.
They want to be out in the kitchen or be a rock man or something like that. Now, this is something that they don't tell the people out here in society when it comes to people going to prison. But they're about to say all they're doing is warehousing. No, I was never warehoused. My mind was always free. You know?
Okay.
But again, that's the problem.
I'm going to have to get you come travel
that's
with me, brother. Hey, I'm going to get you come travel with me, man. Listen, we got 5 minutes.
Which, Reverend Docker, you worked in that system, Reverend Docker. You know it's true.
I sure did.
You know it's true.
Did,
you know it.
Man. Yeah, well, I mean, that's real. Laying up between one another's getting their hair braided too. That's another thing. But we ain't gonna go there tonight. I never could understand that one. But
yep,
anyway. let me go to. I was like, man, what's that dude doing between your legs? Anyway, let's go. Let's stay focused. Pastor Wallace, take the flow, man. Give us a flow here tonight. You there, Pastor Wallace? I'm here. Okay,
I'm
go ahead.
Here.
Wrap us up here. Yeah. We got about 4 minutes before we get out of here.
Yeah, y'all been on it tonight. I tell you, you're stirring it up, you know, tonight. And so I just want to thank God for all of you. And the most important thing that I've discovered, you know, in the Word of God said, whosoever will, let him come. That is true. And I think we have a saying that says, you want what we have to offer and are willing to put forth effort to get it, then you're well on your way. And how you bring this, how you bring forth the unity, you know, also the Word of God says, and I firmly believe in what it says, says, behold, how good and how pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together in unity.
Yes, sir.
And once you gather together and have that power of unity, see, it's self-explanatory at that point. Everybody starts to do what they know how to do. And for those who don't know, that's willing to learn, then the foundation will be built and based on what Luke 1:37 says, for with God nothing shall be impossible.
Amen.
I believe we can get it done.
Amen.
I believe we can get it done. That's what God says. So be encouraged. Keep doing what you're doing, Pastor Dockery, and everybody else that has something to share.
All right. Let me take a second to recognize Ms. Rhema D. for tuning in on Facebook. Brother R.J. Gilmore, thank you for joining. Sonia Anderson, thank you for joining us. We have Professor Robinson there. Tamara Vance, bless you. Thanks for joining us. Bishop Marcus Campbell, thank you all for joining us. And all of you that have called us tonight, we appreciate it. What helps us to do what we do is to have your dialogue. It's important. I'm a firm believer that we all have some contribution to the puzzle of change. And if we are honest about it, and we share that with one another, we can make a whole puzzle, and we can make a difference. Because our babies need it, Professor Robinson. That's who need it. You're absolutely right. I'm not going to blame the children. It's the grown folks.
I'm with myself.
Amen. Nicole. Game ball, Nicole, tonight. I'll cash you on it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We appreciate everyone. And, again, Thursday night, we won't be live streaming because we're going to be traveling, and we're just going to be in a fixed location to do our regular broadcast. But we will be on the podcast platform on Blog Talk Radio, and we definitely have a post and the information about it, but we just won't be live streaming on Facebook. But, guys, thank you. I think this was very useful. Now, I'm going to keep my promise. And Thursday night, I'm going to offer 7 principles, and I'm going to give some background, some research basis for these 7 principles and give you case studies to help you understand how you apply them and how they can make a difference, because the truth of the life, truth of the matter is, it won't happen if you don't put the work in. You've got to put your work in. I want to encourage you to go to www.bfcinstitute.com and learn about what we do. Make a contribution to our calls. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we will be grateful. And once you do that and send us your email, we'll get you your information for your tax document that you need, acknowledging your contribution. No amount is too small, no amount is too much, but we're grateful for your help. Pastor Waller, thank you, man. You've been right there with us. 1098-0405, and Professor Robinson, thank you so much. We appreciate each and every one of you. Yes, sir. Time has got against us again. Pastor Waller playing with the clock, and so we're going to have to get on out of here now. But we're grateful for you, and we will be back on Thursday night, 7 o'clock p.m., for another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, signing out.